My name is Maddie Skank, and I'm 19 years old. Today is November 30th, and I'm speaking with Chris Skank, who is my father. We are recording this interview in East Hampton, New York. All right, what do you feel most grateful for in your life?
I feel grateful for having a house, roof over my head, a happy, healthy family. Had a business that provided for me the whole time, provided for my family, and now everybody's happy and healthy, and now I got grandchildren on the way.
What are some of the most important lessons you've learned in life?
Well, saving money and working with money is a very important lesson. You go all the way back to when I was in grade school, my teacher there in military school actually started telling me how it's important to save money. When you're younger, you have a lot of time and not much money, but if you put a little bit of money to work with a lot of time, you make a lot more money. And I've always held that true. I paid for all my kids' college and most part of it. I put a roof over my head.
All right, what was basic training like?
Basic training is when you go to the Army or any of the services, they start you as you don't know anything about anything, and they break you down till you know nothing about anything, and then they try to build you back up into being a soldier or a Marine or any of the other ones. It's at first it's hard, but you got to learn how to play the game. Some people didn't, and they got kicked out. They didn't make it. But if you learn how to play the game and try as hard as you can, it works out. And then at the end of the day, you turn out being a good person.
What would people do to get kicked out?
A big one, well, first of all, there's no stealing. You're living in a barracks, and the barracks are very tight. You're sleeping right next to your other people. So it's very easy if you lay down your watch or your jewelry or whatever, and you take a shower, you come out, it could be stolen. So stealing is very, very bad. And that's immediately, they'd kick you out immediately if you catch you doing that. Another one is if you're not figuring out after a couple weeks of how to really become a soldier, they'll kick you out because they have no time for that. Fighting. If you're fighting amongst your bunkmates, they don't want that. There's a place and time to fight, and they put you out on the court and let you fight it out, but that's not allowed. It's not going to take much time. But
okay, it's fine. Is there someone that you served with that you remember fondly? Can you tell me about him?
Sure. The guy's name was Lieutenant Jeff Garrett, and we came in the service at the same time. We both went through Fort Sill, Oklahoma together in the same unit. We both went to Lance Missiles, which is his missile unit we were in. We both got transferred to Germany at the same time, and we both were on the same career track. We went through Germany for 3 years together, and at the time we were talking about it, we were going to do the same career path, which was going to transfer. We were in field artillery, we were going to transfer to transportation and try to work 20 years in the military. And I couldn't complete the 20 years, but he did, and he ended up being a full-blown colonel.
Can you tell me about why you couldn't complete the years doing that?
I had what's called an ABM when we were over in Germany, and it put me in the hospital. And eventually I got an honorable discharge, service-connected disability from the Army.
Did any of your military friends play pranks on each other? Can you describe a funny one?
Yeah, the one day, it was April Fool's Day, and I was the battery commander, and my two lieutenants were with me. And the first sergeant, who was not very, didn't have any humor, I'll put it that way, came in late that day, so while he was gone, we went into his office and took his desk and chairs and files. So when he came in, the whole room was empty. And he thought that was not very funny.
Did you guys get in trouble for that?
No, he was my first sergeant. I was his officer.
Oh.
But yeah, we thought it'd be funny. He did not think it was very funny.
Can you tell me about how you ended up in your line of work?
Sure. After I got out of the Army, I went down to Texas for a little while to recover and dabbled around in a few other things, but the main business I got back into was the family business, Skank Fuels. I worked in that business for 25 years. I worked up from being in the stock room up through the vice president to being the CEO. And it was 25 years. It was a great job, great career.
Where's that company located?
East Hampton, New York.
And it was passed down to you?
Yes, my father. It was from 1905 that business started.
So that's your great grandfather.
I was fifth generation. My great great grandfather.
What did you think you were gonna be when you grew up?
When I was in college, I really was interested in being in the military, and I did. I went through the college and got my degree, and also got commissioned in the United States Army as a regular Army officer. I went through the basic training for officers. I went through officer advanced training, and I learned a lot to like that. But on the other side of the fence, I always wanted to work in my family business, which is here in East Hampton, New York, and that's what I ended up doing.
Where's your favorite vacation place?
Walt Disney World in Florida.
Which one of the parks is your favorite?
I like all four of them. Epcot happens to be my favorite, but I love Disney World because I like going on the Haunted Mansion. Epcot, I love going around the world. And Epcot, I used to like a lot better till they brought Frozen in and took my Viking ride out.
Which country is your favorite in Epcot?
Germany is my favorite country for lunch/dinner. We went to France and had crepes for breakfast and espresso. Dinner, sometimes we go to the Japanese steakhouse to have dinner, or Italy and have dinner.
Is the food actually real to every country?
The food is authentic. They have people right from the countries they're serving it. If you're interested in learning their language, you can ask them questions about how to say this or that in their language, and they'll actually talk to you in their language. And I forgot about Canada. The steakhouse is awesome in Canada. But yes.
So you went to a military school, Fork Union Military Academy. When did you get sent there, and why did you get sent there?
I got sent there after graduating my 8th grade year, so starting my 9th grade year. Fork Union is a prep school for young men only. It's in Virginia. We got sent there because my parents had separated at that point, and my mom couldn't handle me, my dad couldn't handle me, so they sent me away.
Did you want to go?
They kind of tricked me. They told me it was fun, I'd be shooting guns all the time, and when I got there, it wasn't fun, I wasn't shooting guns ever.
Did you try to go home ever?
No. Nah.
Like, did you ask them to go take you?
No. I figured they wanted me there, that's why I'm staying.
And you were there all through high school?
9th, 10th, and 11th. And then in 12th grade, I said, you know what, I want to go to a regular high school, and I just went home.
And then where'd you go after high school?
To the University of North Carolina.
And you went into the military from there?
Yes.
What was Fork Union like?
It was a wake-up shock, because before I went in there, I had a little bit longer hair than normal, and I wasn't used to getting up in the mornings and doing stuff on a schedule. And first thing they did was took me to the barbershop and shaved my head down. And second thing they did was took all my civilian clothes away and put me in uniform, so no more civilian clothes. They take them right away and send them home, so you have no more clothes. Then the next thing they do is they stick you in a two-person room in a bunk, and whoever your bunkmate is who it is. They don't give you a choice, and mine happened to be I was right across the hall from Melvin Turpin, who was 7'2", and I was in 9th grade, and I came out my door the first day and went, oh, what the world is that? He was 7'2". But he was very nice. He actually went and played in the NBA. But the roommate that I had at that point was such an idiot. I hated him. We fought every day, and finally I actually joined what's called Rattan Rifles, which was a drill team. Military drill team with rifles and stuff, and they came and moved me out, so I got away from that guy.
They were able to move you out?
Yeah, Rattan had their own housing. So I got away from that guy before we killed each other.
Did you have a favorite teacher there?
All the teachers were very good. It's what's called the 8-week course. So you go for 8 weeks to one class. So in other words, you went to English for 8 weeks, graduated that, then you went to math for 8 weeks, then you graduated that. And there was one English teacher in particular that I sticks out in my mind. His name was Major Spencer, and he was some kind of character. He claims he was one of three people that could actually read your mind, and he actually proved it to us. But he gave us his whole paycheck and let us hide it anywhere we wanted to, and if he couldn't find it, we would get the paycheck. So we blindfolded him. He put he had black patches over his eyes. He had a metal mask he put down over his face and a black hood. And we walked him out across the hall into another room, and someone stayed with him. The rest of us hit his paycheck. We actually pulled down the projector screen, hit it in there, and zipped it back up. And then someone in the room went to tell them they can come back in. That person left. The person that didn't know where it was came back in the room with Major Spencer. And he didn't take the mask off, and he walked around the room, and he found it. And then while he still had his mask on, he said, anybody have a credit card? And he put his hands about 12 inches apart and put them over his head. And you put the credit card in between his head, he could read the number to you.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready?
What's the next question?
Oh, if it's still recording. Thinking back, are you glad you went to Fork Union?
Yep.
It's going still. You can speak.
Yes. It was a good... Didn't like it much when I was there. I did meet a lot of the interesting and great people. Actually, Mom and I were somewhere a while, just recently, and our waiter was from Venezuela, and my guy that lived down the hall from me was Francisco Monagas, and Francisco's Monagas' father was the president of Venezuela. And when I said it to the waiter, he's like, oh my gosh, that was the president of Venezuela. So that's the kind of people I was around in that school.
Small world.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the time you got bit by a brown recluse?
I was bitten by a brown recluse. I was, I think, going from junior to senior year in high school. And I was outside walking around in my backyard with a pair of cut-off jeans and no shoes or socks, and we were playing Frisbee. And I walked into the ivy to grab the Frisbee because whoever was playing with me threw it in the ivy. And when I came out, there was this little brown thing on my ankle and it bit me. It would turn out it was a brown recluse, so it put me up for over a week. I couldn't walk. I was in serious pain. I had to put my foot up in the angle. And throughout that week, it's the where the bite was, it turned into this green, solid head. And after a week, it hurt so bad that I finally said, screw this. And I squeezed it, and it popped. And it was like a foot long with this green, hairy stuff came out of my ankle. And once I finally pulled it all out, first of all, it was great pressure release. Second of all, there was a hole inside my ankle.
That happened here in East Hampton?
Yes, when I was in East Hampton.
So when did the Skank family move from America to Germany?
They moved from Germany to America.
Oops, Germany to America.
They,
I know what you okay.
Mean. They moved from Germany to America in right around 1890. A fellow, the father named Christian Skank, brought his four boys over, and my great grandfather was one of those boys, named Percy Christian Skank.
Did they move straight from Germany to East Hampton?
They actually, when they first got here, they moved to Bridgehampton in Southampton and opened a butcher shop. So they were all butchers. There was four brothers that were butchers. Actually, right next to where the Starbucks is in Bridgehampton, you know. And I don't know at what point, but PC broke off and he started a coal and wood store or shop where Skank Fuels is now.
And did that turn into, when did Skank Fuels start? by Percy?
Well, it's always Skank Fuels, or PC Skank, it was called at first. It was always about coal, energy, that kind of thing. So at that point when they started, it was wood was for your heat and coal was for your heat. And at that point, they were still riding horses around and stuff, so they didn't really have much gas. But then it moved into oil. And then we got rid of the wood and put up shops and started doing air conditioning and then refrigeration and all kind of stuff.
So which son started that business, really?
PC.
When did the fuel part of it come from?
PC started the wood and coal, and then it was along the lines there where my father's father came along, and they started moving. Everybody was stopping to use coal, stopping using it, and they were starting to use oil. So they moved in and started using oil. And then when my father and Dick Herland got involved with it, they brought in service of the units and kept moving on with that. And then when Rod and I got involved with it, we brought in air conditioning and refrigeration and cesspool.
Was there another business other than the butcher and the fuel coal going on?
One of the sons' name was George Skank, and he became a doctor. And in Southampton Hospital, Southampton Hospital wasn't even there yet. And George Skank and nurse, and I can't remember the nurse's name, but they started what's now Southampton Hospital. They started that as a clinic in the same location. And today there's one whole wing named after Skank, George Skank.
What parts of East Hampton did our family own?
Away from the village, there's a thing called Gerard Park that my grandfather owned. He had three partners on it, and they basically, it was before it was built up, and they used it to ride horseback up and down the thing. And that's all they used it for, just horse riding horses back and forth. It's been sold now, and I think there's probably about 50 to 100 houses on that same piece of land, so...
How much do they sell it for?
They sold it for $4,000.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful roads here, too.
Yeah. They're up on in the village itself. If you go down towards across the street from the Palm, that brick is a white brick building. If you look at it, it's actually three stores right on the corner there. That was my uncle's, which is my grandfather's sister married him. And he built that building, and there was a shoe store in there and two rentals. And right now, he sold that, so all three of those are rental spaces. And on the corner of number one Main Street was another one of his brothers, and they moved that house up to across the street from B&B, British Hampton Bank, up around Toyson Lane. The parking lot that's next door to Skank Fuels used to be all ours. And on the other side of Skank Fuels is where the Chinese food and all that place is. That was all owned by us, too.
And there were farms there? Or there was a little farm there, too?
Yeah, there was. The town was a lot different. There was farms there. Skank Fuels itself used to have a farm in the back. We used to have chickens, cows, horses, roosters, big giant wood pile.
What are some of your hobbies?
I particularly like to take pictures. I'm a pretty good photographer, and I liked when my youngest daughter was in school. I got to taking pictures of her while she was doing all of her sports, and I got pretty good at it. And I ended up at the end of her four-year career, I ended up taking pictures of just about all of her friends, and parents were thanking me, and I enjoyed it. It was very fun. And I ended up making her last yearbook. I got a nice shout out in the yearbook, which was very nice.
Have you ever made any money off your photos, or do you plan on trying to?
I've sold a couple pictures. A couple artists have had me take pictures of all their paintings. So catalog them. And also, about a month ago, I had a guy come up. He needed photos for a magazine because he was getting promoted to be the president of some company or something like that. So I took a couple pictures of him, and those got in the magazine. The drone shots I've been taking are going in all kind of real estate stuff, all kind of real estate magazines.
How many influential people did you meet along your road at Fork Union Military Academy?
One that stands out the highest and the most was Vinny Testaverde, who was the nicest person you could ever imagine. He was in my platoon. I was actually his boss, which means I was his platoon sergeant at the time. But he turned out to go to University of Miami, and then he ended up turning up getting the Heisman Trophy and played in the NFL for, I think, probably 20 years. He was awesome. Nicest guy you could ever meet. Some other people were Kevin Blank, which is the inventor of Under Armour. He invented it because he was on the football team. And in August in Fork Union, the temperatures get up to probably 90, 95 degrees with 90% humidity. And he was tired of sweating with the cotton t-shirts. So he asked the coach of the team, which was called Coach Pulliam. He asked him if there's something. He made this kind of new kind of t-shirt. He wanted to know if the Fork Union football team would wear it for a while and try it out. And it turns out that was the beginning of Under Armour.
Was Fork Union Military Academy only for high school students?
No, it had underclass, which was started, I think, at like 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And that was the junior school. And then it had the regular high school, which went 9, 10, 11, 12. And then after high school, there was a postgraduate team. And the postgraduates were there. There were star athletes in their high schools, but they just didn't have the grades to get in the college they wanted to go to. So they would come there. They'd take that 8-week course, which was, if they were weak in English or math or whatever, they would just get English or math for 8 straight weeks. Really get a handle on it, and at the same time they'd be playing the sport that they were good at, and which is Vinny Testaverde is a perfect example. He came out of Elmont, New York, didn't quite have the grades. He was a superstar quarterback, but didn't really have the grades to get to where he wanted to go, which in turn was University of Miami. So he came there, played football, was the best quarterback, best thrower I've ever seen on the ball. He threw. At the first day of the school, I actually saw this. The first day of school, they had all the quarterbacks that wanted to play quarterback, everybody on the one goal line. They gave them all the football, and everybody got to throw it as far as they could. And someone threw it. Someone would throw it 50 yards, 60 yards. Vinny stood on the back line and threw it all the way to the other end zone. So that was impressive.
You did so much. Thank you.
Okay, you got to.
What was the living situation like at Fork Union with the younger kids and post-grads?
They mixed us all together, which when I first got there, I was in 9th grade. And like I said, I was across the hall from a 7'2" Melvin Turpin, and his roommate was 6'9", and I was in 9th grade. So my voice had just changed, and I was looking across the hall at these two men. So it was kind of different, but they did that. They put all the same people in the same, all the grades from 9th up through postgraduate, all in the same rooms. And I met some really nice football players, and I was really good at math and English, and some of them were having trouble with that. So they would come up and ask me for help, and I enjoyed helping them, and I made some good friends by doing that.
About how many kids went to school there?
In the upper class alone, there probably was about 250 kids.
Was it a small community? Did everyone know each other?
The school was, yeah. We were all in companies, so Alpha Company knew Bravo. The Alpha Company people, Bravo Company knew Bravo Company people. You didn't mix much, but it was, like I say, it was an all boys school. So on weekends, starting Friday afternoon through Sunday at church time, which we all had to go to church on Sunday. All the different companies would play sports together. We'd play football, we'd play baseball, anything rough and muddy. We'd go out and roll in the mud just about, just because we were all boys. That's what boys do.
What's the difference between companies? How do you get put in your company?
It was not at the beginning. They just put you in whatever company had openings. Once you got there and you were becoming in your second year, then you got to choose where you lived and who you lived with.
Oh, company is just what building you lived in?
Yeah, it's basically just called it's a building.
Did you have a favorite pet?
Yes, in Germany I bought for your mother's birthday, I got it was half Rottweiler, half German Shepherd. And I bought him when he was 7 weeks old. He was as big enough you could put him in your hands. We named him Butch. And he grew so fast that when he first got him, we brought him back to the apartment, and he would go underneath the bed to sleep underneath us, and then he'd come, and the next morning he'd back out from the bed, and the next day he'd go underneath the bed. He was growing so fast that one night he crawled under the bed, and then the next morning he was crying and whining. He'd grown so big he couldn't crawl back out of the bed. We had to get up and lift the bed up to let him get out of the bed. But now he was good. I bought it for your mom and to protect the two youngest kids at the time and their mother when I was out in the field with the Army.
What's your earliest memory?
I remember, I don't know if I was 2 or 3, but I got a pair of roller skates and a cowboy hat. And I was in the backyard, and we lived in Cincinnati, Ohio at the time. And I was roller skating, and my mom went, and at the time it wasn't, I don't know what kind of camera it was kind of used film, I think, real film. But she went and got the camera and she put me way over there and said, roller skate toward me. So as soon as I did, I started, I hit a rock, I went down, I hit my face, and I got up, my face was all bloody.
She had a video of it?
And it was all on video, that's why I remember it.
What was one of your scariest moments?
We were in St. Martin, and you were not quite 16 yet.
I was 13.
Yeah, you were 13. And the legal limit to ride a jet ski was 16, but you wanted to ride it really bad, and you were big for your age, and I thought you could handle it, so I went ahead and said you were 16. We got you on the jet ski, and at first, you know, they did a test run, so we had you around a circle and around cones, and you did fine, and my plan was to be behind you as we were driving, but coming out of the test circle, somehow you ended up behind me, and we were putting down the channel, which was fine, and I was kept looking back at you, you were doing fine. It was probably about 3/4 of a mile we were going down the channel, and you were doing fine. There was one bridge with two big giant pillars, and the first guy went through the bridge, and the wake started to come back and forth when there people ahead of us were going through the bridge. And I looked back and you were fine. When I looked forward to go through the bridge, you got outside of my wake and it drove me straight into the bridge. And the rest of us kept going. And when we got up about 1,000 feet further, the guy that was the lead of us turned around and shot out, go back and see what was going on. I watched him and I saw you not there, so I followed him back. But what had happened is you had run straight head first into the bridge. And when we got back to see you, you were floating in the water, not moving. And that guy jumped in the water. I just came up next to him. He was holding on to the side of my jet ski and holding on to you. And he flagged down an old fisherman riding by that didn't even speak English. He was an old French fisherman. We picked you up, threw you into the boat. And at that point, you came around and you were like, "Get off me, what are you doing? I can do it myself." And you got inside the boat, and then the old fisherman, he told the old fisherman where we came from, and the old fisherman took off with you. And at that point, all the rest of the people came back, and I shot down the channel, chasing you down the channel. And we got you into the hospital, and it was basically a third world hospital, because they had no way to do a CAT scan or anything like that. And once they did get the machine together and all that, I had to be the technician. And I don't know how to do a CAT scan, but I did that day. I did a CAT scan on you. They had, the way that works down there is they rotate 3 months on and 3 months off. So they have 3 months, they have a certain doctor from France come over and be their doctor. And it turns out he was a hand surgeon, which not only did you break your head, you broke your finger. So the hand surgeon, they took you into operation the next day, and the hand surgeon put a pin in your finger, and the head surgeon fixed you up. And we went home from there and got to go back to other America. The lesson learned is don't let your daughter lay down in the sun without sunblock. The end.
All right. Thank you so much for the interview, Dad.